Welcome, everyone, to the Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek, the official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Enchanting to see you again, Matthew. The Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 306, Merry Meet Again, is brought to you by Corbis by Wizard. Find your flock.
Happy Monday, Pete. Happy post-first weekend of Rise of Skywalker, Pete, our two-hour, 15-minute podcast on that effervescent film awaits on the Pop Culture Podcast feed, which is how many of you are listening to this. So if you haven't clicked, click for that.
Yes, we will also be recording our Watchmen season, hopefully not series, wrap. That'll be coming your way on Christmas Day. Still an opportunity for you to enter the review raffle, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and be entered for a special Watchmen prize. But now, Matt, previously on Fred from the Netherlands.
Hello, Matt and Pete, and all listeners to Fantastic Geek. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Marvel's Runaways Season 3, Episode 6. Okay. The next recording is my summary of the whole series of Runaways.
It's okay, Victor. It might help.
Well, my experience began when an alien ingratiated himself into a friend group. He cured my cancer by injecting me with his DNA, which caused me to go berserk and try to kill my son. Luckily, my wife shot me in time. I sabotaged the alien ship, and he responded by leaping into my body, where I lived in a state of constant drowning. While he was in control of my body, he slept with my wife, imprisoned my son, and indirectly forced me to have sex with her. The only way I was finally rid of him was when his energy was torn from my body as I was thrown into an alternate dimension where I was forced to relive childhood abuse over and over again.
With special thanks to Victor Stein for his summary and Stacey Yorks for stimulating him to do so. Greetings, all the best, and have a nice Christmas, Fred from the Netherlands.
Pete, Fred capturing one of the most iconic slash cringeworthy slash amazing slash weird moments of this season, of this series. So with that in mind, Pete, take us back to the beginning of this iconic episode 306.
An unnamed man awakes to the sound of Morgan Le Fay casting a spell on his Corbis by Wizard phone. At the hostel, Molly is frightened by the birds Nico keeps conjuring in her attempt to rescue Alex from the dark whatever that place was. Like Old Lace, the Runaways are crazy hungry. Dale's road trip money means big brunch. Online for brunch, they meet Max, who's handing out free Corbis by Wiz phones. Gert has instant chemistry with him because he likes to listen to podcasts. Chase does not. The Wiz phone Corbis connects users with an instant community. As they eat, the Runaways recap that they have missed prom and graduation, but can't move back in with their folks. Max bumps into a Wiz phone Corbis fanboy who beats him around before Molly rescues him. Dale recaps his misadventures from a tent, rashes, raccoons, urine, body odor. Molly watches as Carolina is worshipped by the Church of Gaborim followers. Vaughn explains Leslie has brought the church into the post Radiance phase. It seems like she's trying to do good. Nico meets with her mother and learns her father has left. She wants help in bringing Alex back, but won't let her be with Morgan. Nico gets a text from her father to meet at the Essex Tower Hotel, which she keeps from Tina. Vaughn asks Molly to lock her phone up, but when she sees Bodhi, she agrees. Nico meets with her happy and healed father and discovers he's with Morgan, who uses her power to pause everyone and explains Nico let her out. Robert asks Nico to give Morgan a chance. Gert is distracted by her whiz phone Corvus and drops it when Chase saves her from walking into traffic. Victor and Stacy attend an alien abductee anonymous meeting where they learn they were the only ones who weren't probed anally. Victor shares his story, but they think he is mocking them. Molly bonds with Bodhi, but Dale the Fail is living amongst the church members. As he tries to fix Gert's phone, Chase finds a feather in it, which, when removed, renders the phone into ash, further angering her because she can't text Max now. Carolina doesn't want Nico to see Morgan. Nico uses the staff on the feather and is able to see Alex. Morgan goes to see Tamar, who's getting full-time moved-in help from Jeffrey Wilder. Morgan's building the WizPhone Corvus headquarters in the neighborhood. Gert realizes the phones are making people violent. They decide to go to that night's wizard party to learn more. At Victor's, Stacy sees Janet's consciousness is in the computer. Robert names Morgan CEO of Wizard, prompting Tina to make a scene before she's escorted out, warning Nico not to let her get the staff. Gert and Chase have a heart-to-heart, and they agree it's not a good time for them to be together. Nico runs into Jeffrey and Tamar at the party. He's missed Alex and wonders why he wasn't at his wife's funeral and is worried about him. Nico reassures him she'll bring Alex back. Carolina sees women with distorted faces enjoying the party when Morgan sneaks up on her. She wants to know what Carolina is. Bronwyn reminds Max he signed a non-disclosure agreement about the WizPhone Corvus, and she uses a spell to wipe his mind. Carolina confronts Nico about the darkness rising in her, but she goes through with a ritual by Morgan and her followers, who have the Darkhold book to initiate her into their coven. Chase tells Carolina and Gert the WizPhones will be released worldwide any day now. Molly becomes possessed by the WizPhone Corvus.
Pete, let's talk villains in this episode. And is perhaps the most villainous force in this episode WizPhone Corvus?
Screen time is a menace, Matt. We see it everywhere. I mean, Gert nearly got run over. Who knows what kind of things they're TikToking or Snapchatting or WizPhoning to each other IRL.
So true. I'll say this, Pete. I understand that screen time is kind of increasingly a cultural concern, not just, you know, like kids these days, but I think we're starting to understand long-term effects and short-term effects and things like that. And I don't want to take away from that message, but this as a threat kind of sort of felt like the people writing the episode were like, kids, I just don't understand them anymore. Let's make the phone the villain, because my kid won't talk to me when I say, how's your day? So in that regard, Pete, I guess the metaphor is clear. Boo phones.
I mean, it's a novel decision given the one family's access to technology and reach to make that the vehicle for a threat. I don't have a problem with it. I kind of dug the commercial at the beginning there. It's nowhere near as bad as last episode, but it feels like we've lost some juice.
Well, Pete, more Morgan Le Fay in this episode. I was a little surprised to see, after her kind of more background role in these prior episodes, to see her stop time or whatever that was at the brunching restaurant. Quite a display of her power, as clearly she's taking what perhaps I had anticipated would be the beginning of the season. But here she is at the midpoint of the season, taking the
to have her fully involved in the narrative in an episode for the first time, I suppose, makes sense until we delve into any kind of background. And given that the Darkhold would seem to be part of her dastardly plot only ups the ante.
And that was surprising, too. I must confess, Pete, part of this episode I watched in the wee hours of the morn, and it was like, did I just see that? Did I have a flashback? Surely I didn't, like, miss...
Have you been possessed by your screen?
Oh, my goodness, Pete. It's all coming together. I don't trust in what I'm seeing because this
dark
is an episode...
Dark hold, dark phone.
Yes. Will Ghost Rider be showing up? Oh, no, they canceled that show. But, Pete, just like in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's the Darkhold. And, yeah, that's certainly a fun moment there. However, each of these fun moments comes with a bit of sadness, Pete. After this episode, only four left. We're getting into some crisscross stuff now. We have yet to get to the big crisscross ahead. So, bittersweet.
And it feels like more story vegetables than story dessert.
Yes, I would agree with that. I also, and again, maybe this is my expectations being out of whack versus the reality of the story that the show wants to tell. But the fact that we still have these parents hanging around here in a season that was sold, at least early on, as moving away from the parents, that surprises me too. Pete, can I propose, tell me if this is cruel, can I propose as a story villain, whoever added internet mom returning on the TV there, like, I know it was forecast that she was now going to live in the Matrix and whatnot, but to be like, let me turn the TV, look, Chase, mom's home, I had a little bit of a guffaw and a groan.
You had quite a few gripes with this episode. I was just glad they were not in the strangest episode of Runaways that didn't land ever in the previous one.
Pete, I love that Fred outlined for us, particularly early in the episode, early in the podcast episode, the alien probing speech. I enjoyed that scene a whole lot less than you, I think, because I just imagined what it was like to be at the table read where this was the route the story went.
Oh, come on. They ate it up. It was light. There are far worse scenes in this episode alone that, you know, I'm bracing as I'm watching it, you know, having gotten a little bit of a heads up from you that it's a tough scene, and I could not disagree more. I found it light. If anything, the thing that skeeved me out was towards the end of it. You know, now that we know that Stacy and Victor, you know, under the sway of the Gaborim, had been intimate, the scene at the end of that scene where Stacy is excited to be invited over to Victor's with the prospect of work comes off, I think, a little weird. But I dug the tropes they were using for that particular scene.
Now, Pete, tell me your thoughts on Bronwyn in this episode.
I mean, that one of the many women seen, presumably because it's name-checked, a coven gets a name, that they're doing things, that she is also using magic. I mean, we flash back to the photo of Morgan that was seen at the Minoru house that was then made to disappear. So we can only assume that those women that were around her make up her coven.
Let's switch gears now to some theories, Pete. Will we ever see Cloak and Dagger?
You'd have to think that it seems a missed opportunity to not inject them at this point in the story. We're going to eventually see them, but I feel like they really would have added something to the past two episodes instead of this part of the story feels super stretched out. And I don't feel like we're really going anywhere other than Morgan does bad things and Alex is trapped someplace.
I just continually feel like this teen team up of Runaways meet Cloak and Dagger, brought to you by the people who we can basically all agree messed up the team up of the Defenders in a way that was earned but not satisfying. And I feel like we're on a similar route here. And I don't mean to overly point fingers at Jeff Loeb, who I know, you know, is in the process of winding down his time at Marvel TV, or if you like my pet theory, here we are, Pete, theories about the real world in our theory segment. I have to wonder if maybe they're keeping him on just to block him from going to the competition quite yet, whether that's, you know, DC, CW or whatever it might be. Just, you know, hey, Jeff, help us with the transition. No meetings today. Just, you're still under contract, so don't go anywhere. But I don't know. I feel like there's a similar muddiness from Defenders to what I had hoped to be a really cool team up of these teen characters.
I enjoyed Defenders. Is it what it could have been? It's not. But I think it works. I think it was successful in what they set out to do. And to bring this team up together, I mean, we still haven't watched and podcast the episode. I'm going to withhold judgment until I've had a chance to discuss that with you. I think some things in this episode in particular, I mean, let's go to the hashtag it's all connected, Matt, that the Darkhold, that unless Runaways viewers have seen Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., this is a new thing to them. It is not to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
And again, I appreciate the notion of that particular prop having crossed over. And I suppose you are correct. It's best to reserve judgment, not just with Cloak and Dagger, but, you know, let's see what they do with the Darkhold, because it could be some really good stuff. If this was just a passing thing, then it'll be a missed opportunity. Although, I don't know, I sense it won't be a missed opportunity. I sense that they will do more with it, but, you know, Pete, I hate to sound like I'm repeating myself. We're at a point in this season, as I've said in other seasons of other shows, you know, we're only four episodes left here and we have a lot of ground to cover in terms of wrapping up the season storylines, wrapping up character beats, introducing Cloak and Dagger, defeating Morgan Le Fay, possibly putting whatever sort of series finale aspect that there might be in episode 310. So if they're now going to do stuff with the Darkhold, how much will there be? I feel like there's not a ton of story space to do it. If there is, you know, chop chop, let's get going with it in 307.
The Darkhold was last glimpsed in season 4 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It was part of a season-long storyline that opened with Ghost Rider Robbie Reyes, and he was the last person seen in possession of it. Took it through a portal. How it is wound up in the hands of Morgan Le Fay remains to be seen.
So how about this for our theory segment, Pete? We probably would have heard if there was a Ghost Rider cameo, either in special effect form or with actor Diego Luna. Will we at least get some sort of dialogue offering, you know, oh, when I defeated that man on the motorcycle? I would hope that we get something like that.
I sure hope so. I mean, to reflect back on, all right, when did we last see that? Oh, okay, here's what happened with it. And to see it here, and again, you know, there are people who watch all the shows. There are people that pick and choose. I think the Runaways might be on the more of a pick and choose level. And it's rewarding to watch them all and to see a handoff like this. But for the uninitiated, it's going to take a little bit of comprehension to understand what they're looking at. And that's where, all right, so you've seen it. I can only imagine the next episode we're going to explain it.
Pete, what else is in your theory whiz phone?
So you talked about, we've talked repeatedly about how the parents get pulled back on in this season. Carolina says it in this episode that they're not on the run from their parents anymore. And I think that fundamentally changes the premise of the show.
And I think that shows nowadays are best served when, you know, when the initial premise does continue to evolve. The actors playing the parents are certainly beyond likable. And if the story is going to come up with ways that are either directly logical or even kind of bend things ever so slightly, like, hey, it's season three, second half, we're going to just get over the fact that you killed, like, you know, over a dozen kids in order to feed this alien host guy. We're just going to let it go because, darn it, you're a great actor and we want you in the show. I'm okay with that. I think most people are okay with that.
This post-radiance phase that the Church of Gaborim has entered, this can only be a good thing, right?
Again, my first reaction, Pete, is whatever they're going to do with it, there's only four episodes left. So if they're setting up some sort of, oh man, here the church goes down the wrong path again, or, you know, shame on the people who are still following it despite its lousy record, or hooray for the people who have overcome the lousy record and still have faith. Like, whatever statement you want to make, you only have four episodes to do that, plus Morgan Le Fay, plus Cloak and Dagger, plus Runaways, the end. Now's an interesting time to bring it back, I suppose.
Seeing two characters like Jeffrey Wilder and Tamar, who have been at diametric opposition throughout this series, together, convinces me that there's magic, that somebody is under a spell, if not both of them.
Yeah, I have no ill will towards the character of Tamar. She's injected fresh and interesting ideas into the show. That said, I was surprised that she's still hanging around in the story at this point. I would just wonder, you know, to what story effect, or is it just, hey, she's a great presence on the show, we want to keep her on there? If so, that's fine. Just give me a little more story direction, please, show.
Janet's consciousness uploaded into the computer. We had an inkling that goodbye wasn't goodbye. You know, I think that was the more awkward scene compared to the alien abductee support group.
And the way it was shot did not help. Like, the only way it could have been more silly is if it was like, hey, buddy, meet your new mommy. She's mommy on the internet, you know, and the TV turning and whatnot. Maybe on another level, both subconscious and maybe, you know, maybe in the tippity top of the brain, maybe my complaint is stakes. They killed her and it was sad, and now she's not killed. Now, I granted, this was all seeded. This return surprises no one. But you don't get credit for killing off mom, who's now had this really great arc, when all she did was just, I don't want to say all, but the flip side is, it's also completely fictional. This is not like, oh man, Pete, we had to say goodbye to Aunt Susie, who now can only live abroad because, you know, she's in some sort of A-team situation, always on the run. Like, this is by definition a ridiculous thing where now she's the computer copy that lives on the Matrix. But you don't get credit for killing her off if the solution is now she's just on TV all the time.
We've brought the Darkhold over from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Will they upload her consciousness onto a life model decoy, an LMD?
If they are, that's something else that you might want to do in these last four episodes. So maybe, and there's been, you know, Pete, here we are. Okay, Marvel TV, pinky up, much better than that, you know, that junk that the CW does with Warner, you know, with DC. But everybody who watches those shows loving the crossover that they've been doing. Our Twitter feed nonstop filled with, you know, with all this great stuff regarding the crossovers and here's this one's costume and oh man, you know, Brandon Routh returns, all of that stuff. They're over at DCCW, they're doing the crossover that we wanted on Marvel TV that we never got really. So you want to sit and say, at best, we're going to have Cloak and Dagger crossover for four episodes. Something tells me it's maybe two. You want to say we're going to throw the Darkhold over because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has already dipped into magic. Fine. You want to bring a character back by virtue of an LMD. That's great. All of these things are going to happen in the last four recorded hours of Marvel TV. You know, we still have the last season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but that was done before this. So, like, this is chronologically the end of Marvel TV, and now is when you want to cross over all this awesome stuff. I guess better late than never, but boy, it's darn close to the end.
Well, Matt, when we have our own Darkhold keeping us on the air, keeping us on schedule, and allowing us to hold off the people coming to collect bills, you know, having those people behind us, our coven, if you will, makes it that much easier.
Indeed, Pete. And so much bigly thanks to the people who support us on patreon.com/fantasticgeek, making sure that our coven, it's a positive one, okay? This is true, Pete. This is a true fact. Nobody who has ever listened to a Fantastic Geek podcast has ever had to pull a feather out of their device that we place there, okay? We promise 100%, or rather 0%, oh man, I hope that wasn't a Freudian slip, there's 0% dark magic in every podcast, and you know what? Those patrons help keep it that way.
The magic that you guys help us create here and just lives within you and you imbue into us. Get yourself over to patreon.com/fantasticgeek with the P, with the H, and check out all the different levels you can contribute at. It takes just $1 a month to get you in that door, and there is something for everybody.
Pete, the best thing, though, it's for everybody and it's free. It's talking to you on Twitter. How can people do so?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKlar, KetElAar, 10,977 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do me a touch of the podcast, comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek with the PH, all one word, like it today.
Pete, for those listening in the Pop Culture Podcast feed, what says Christmas more than talking about the season wrap of Watchmen, a season that has dealt with comic book stuff, issues of gender, race, inequality, our country, our world, etc. So, though it might be contrasting, you know what? Hopefully have a wonderful Christmas, and Watchmen can help be a little contrast to that since it explores a terrible and dark world, one sometimes like our own. But if you're here for Runaways, we'll be back on Friday, Pete, for episode 307. And then we have Mandalorian on Saturday and more Runaways on Sunday. So, Pete, lots of universes explored, lots of good times to be had on Fantastic Geek. With that, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you, Pete, the final word.
It smells dead ass bomb in here, fam. To make this long story short, when the cop pulled me over, I was scared as hell. I said, I don't have a license, but I drive very well, officer. Almost had a heart attack that day. Come to find out the girl was a 12.